Happy first day of spring here on the Brad Sesmat Show on Sports360AZ.com. Neither of us are Brad Sesmat. I'm Devin Henry. That's Jordan Hamm. Two people to fill in for the biggest guy of character and knowledge. And am I talking too much?
And just a naturally big human.
Yeah,
that too. I could get on your shoulders, and I think we might match his height.
Maybe, if we're lucky.
Yeah.
Maybe.
We outnumber the follicles, the hair follicles, though. So we got that going for us.
That works out. Anyway, this is the Brad Sesmat Show. Devin Henry, Jordan Hamm here on Sports360AZ.com, just like every day. I guess we're really filling in for Brad and Eric, really. We'll have at least Brad back tomorrow. I don't know about Eric. I'm having to go solo on Thursday.
He's going hiking today, so he may just chill out on top of a mountain for a couple days. Who knows?
I like that.
Yeah,
Sounds wide open.
Sounds
good. But this is the first time, because we are also going to have an episode of the Five-Star Sit-Down coming up after this. Gilbert quarterback Will Plummer, then also from Sun Devil Source. He's a publisher for Sun Devil Source. Chris Cartman will be joining us to talk about ASU's big Elite Day. Not Junior Day, but
right.
Elite Day. A whole bunch of huge prospects from all around the nation came into ASU to not work out. It's hard to choose words when you're talking about recruiting.
Yeah, it's an unofficial visit.
Yeah.
You know, that they're going on. So really, it's more, I think, more so ASU showing what they could provide these recruits, more so than what the recruits could provide them. Obviously, you know, they're on ASU's radar because they are some of the top guys in the state, in the nation. So, yeah, but a collection of talent that, you know, I think has, at least in recent memory, I don't remember this many top flight guys all on one visit. Obviously, they want to have a productive weekend with that. And it sounds like, you know, they made a good impression and maybe made some inroads with some programs and some guys that in the 2020 class and 2021 that may lead to some commitments. Who knows?
And we are also going to take a look at where some of the top guys in Arizona have been visiting as of recent. That's the Five-Star Sit-Down coming up here in a little bit. But we still do have the Brad Sesmat Show. Yes, we're going to talk about St. John's and Arizona State basketball. In the first four, I have something to say about my opinion on the first four. It's probably actually what a lot of people think, but it's something that never gets talked about, so I'm interested to hear what you have to say about this, Jordan.
All right.
Also, we're going to talk some D-backs here in just a couple minutes, and we are all brought to you, and the rundown is brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. Do that with life insurance. Brad talks about it every day that he's here. When he's not here, I talk about it, because not only are they our sponsors, but also Brad is licensed with Sagicor, and if he did not trust what Sagicor is trying to put out there, he wouldn't be actually going out and talking to people about what they have in store next. Do they have everything looked over and ready for what might come next? If you don't, be sure to give our friends at Sagicor a call. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. But we all know, Jordan, you are a seam head. Diamond in the Business podcast. Check it out on sports360az.com. Believe it or not, it is the first day of spring. Spring training ends in like 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
So,
and it has, like every year, it always seems like when pitchers and catchers report, it's like, I got so much time, I'm going to hit all of these stories. And then you blink, and it's like, okay, opening day, at least for the league, has already happened. For the Diamondbacks, it happens in a little bit over a week, which is just absolutely insane. But we've seen that the roster is starting to take shape a little bit. Roles are starting to be pinned down, and they're starting to shave off some of those extra guys that are in the big league clubhouse, moving a lot of them to the minor league camp now. So had 8 roster moves yesterday. I think headlined by that group is Yasmani Tomas. I don't think it's much of a surprise. You know, he's had a very good spring, but he seems to be kind of the odd man out right now, making the transition to first base. Obviously, there wasn't much of a need for him to be there when you had Paul Goldschmidt, but with Jake Lamb, Christian Walker there, that opened up an opportunity for him. And based on everything that I saw, was Torey Lovello was just like, he needs more reps at first base. He's hitting the cover off the ball. Again, spring training, take everything with a grain of salt, you know, as everybody's kind of working through everything. But he got off to a hot start, and I think that this could be a win for the Diamondbacks if he comes in, kills it in AAA, maybe even gets called up, shows some flashes. Maybe they're finally able to, you know, potentially move him or use him within that lineup. Again, it's tough to navigate It seems right like right now they have about 28 spots for that 25-man roster. But if they can show that he really has kind of turned it around and found a nice home at first base for any National League team looking for him for a big bat, or an American League team looking for a designated hitter, like all of a sudden then you have options. And Mike Hazen, as we've seen, when he doesn't need much opportunity to go ahead and make a deal if he feels like it's going to help the ball club. So Yasmani Tomas, I don't think his value has been any higher in recent years than it is right now.
And another kind of regular that was on that MLB D-backs roster was Ruby De La Rosa, who is now being moved down to the minors as well. He's kind of been up and out. He's not the biggest name in the world, but nonetheless, looking back the last couple of years, I didn't think that the pitching staff would be what kind of centered around the team to help them get to the postseason years ago.
And look, what has been going on with Ruby De La Rosa, you have two Tommy John surgeries. They don't want to rush him back. He's been impressive, and it sounds like he is close, and I think he could be definitely a bullpen option for them. A Randall Delgado type, but he still has that like heavy fastball that can force a lot of ground balls. I think that there is a spot for him eventually on this big league roster, but I think they're just trying to make sure that he's not rushing in any way. Obviously, this is obviously you don't want to rush with one Tommy John, let alone two. And I'm sure this is kind of uncharted territory for a lot of members of this team trying to navigate to make sure that he's back and healthy for the long term after going through so much. It's amazing for him to even get back to the big league clubhouse in spring training based on everything he's been through injury-wise.
Yeah. And I don't know if I'm like too small picture about this, but what I've always, like the last 2 years, what I've been constantly thinking of is no JD Martinez, Paul Goldschmidt's gone. Mm-hmm. So your bats are gone. And you look back like 3 years ago, and it's always a question of, is this pitching staff going to get the job done? Not just opening games, but can they close a game? So on and so forth. Then, of course, you have the however many million hundred guy, Zach Greinke, come in. He wasn't always the best in the world, but he's still arguably the best in the clubhouse. And for the third time now, he's going to be the opening day starter as well.
Yeah, and I think that's the go-to move. Yeah. And I think that the likely number two then is Robbie Ray. We'll see how this all shakes out. Again, this isn't, I think Torey Lovello has been very clear that this isn't a hierarchy of like, I'm going to rank the pitchers 1 through 5 and have them. He's doing it based on matchups, based on how much rest he can get each of his guys. They're going to mix and match. And honestly, when off days start going into effect, in the season, it's going to get so out of whack that you're not really going to have much of an idea of where they are necessarily in the rotation. I think right now I've been very vocal about kind of where the pitching staff is, and specifically the bullpen. I feel like this is the strength of the team. And when you add in Adam Jones, and you can now move Ketel Marte consistently back into the infield, where that will probably be his main focus, all of a sudden it's bullpen and defense for them. I still think that they have plenty of guys offensively that can make a lot of noise. David Peralta's coming off a career year, and he was a guy that was a table setter for them. I think maybe he's going to move down in the lineup a little bit, maybe two or three, but a lot of times I loved seeing him up at the top of the lineup, just being that spark plug. He also could hit for power from that leadoff spot, which is huge. And I think Steven Souza Jr. is going to have a bounce back year. Everyone forgets he joined the team like 2 weeks into spring training camp, quickly got hurt. I think he would admit rushed back. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden he's playing about 70 games this year or last year, and he's playing catch up throughout. And it just never really clicked for him. I think having a fresh year for him coming off a 2017 where he had a career year, I think that he could really develop into a nice middle of the lineup bat. And I think Wilmer Flores is a nice offensive addition. So I don't think the offense is totally gone. Obviously, some of the heavy hitters are missing, but I think that they've mixed and matched well, where they have a consistent lineup and a solid 1 through 7 in that lineup.
And I mean, like you can't take anything too much from spring training to go like
right.
I mean, maybe I don't know. I would compare it to summer league in the NBA. Like the worst team is always like the summer league champion. You're like, this team's got it. No, it's pretty regular.
What was it? A couple years ago, or more than a couple years ago now, but the Detroit Lions went 4-0 in the preseason, and then 0-16, the rest of the way, when games actually counted. So I feel like it's more of an indication of, these young guys, the guys that are on the 40-man roster, but maybe not necessarily the big league roster, that you can get a better indication of them facing big league talent than the guys who, look, Zach Greinke showed up like 2 weeks into camp, and he's on his own timeline. A lot of these players, Walker Buehler, I saw for the Dodgers yesterday, threw his first innings of the Cactus League. I think it's one of those things where everybody's on their own timelines. They're not going to push too hard. They know it's a long year. They're trying to set themselves up and make sure they're hitting the ground running.
And before we get off of baseball, I do, I got to mention this because this is so cool. ASU baseball is 19-0.
What a turnaround.
19-0. And I mean, they weren't the worst last year. I watched the entire Cal series, and you can see specks of, there's greatness waiting on this team. And probably the best part of that was that there was, no seniors who left last year, really. So now they're growing up. Now you're the only undefeated team in NCAA baseball. Torkelson hasn't been hitting for power like he was last year, but he's still getting on the base constantly, which is all you really need. And then they're sealing the deal. They got a game tonight against Cal Baptist. And, I mean, that's another one where you go, of course, anyone can win any game because it's baseball. But you still look as they'll head into Pac-12 play, more definitively after this game. But, I mean, you look at this team, you're 19-0 is something where, I mean, they're basically in the tournament now. It's kind of like when ASU basketball went undefeated in non-conference play last year.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, I think. Obviously, it's a great turnaround from last year. I think the most surprising part, though, coming into the season, it was all right, you have a Friday starter. You think you have a Saturday starter, but, there was talk of position players being pitchers. And in the Pac-12, that's going to be an issue. But the pitching staff has been good. They're scoring at a clip that it doesn't really matter. When you're putting up 9 runs a game, you're usually in pretty good shape to go ahead and win. Obviously, Pac-12, once you get to conference play, they haven't played any of the world beaters in non-conference. They haven't played, I'm
nobody's.
Not gonna, yeah, it's not cupcakes, but, you're not going and playing these teams that, every weekend you're playing a former College World Series team or anything like that, but you're playing solid programs. So to see where they are and, hitting the ground running, we knew it was going to be a big year for Tracy Smith and his future with the Sun Devils. I don't think you can ask for a much better start to the year.
No.
But I know that they're definitely looking at the Pac-12 and they know that they need to keep the momentum going because obviously it's one of the premier conferences in college baseball.
Obviously, the conference of champions in some of the sports sometimes. But anyway, no. Speaking of conference of champions, there's 3 conference of champions, Pac-12. If you guys don't know that, teams in the NCAA March Madness tournament that does include ASU for the second year in a row. Although it's in the play-in game, not the actual tournament, we'll discuss further on the
first
other side.
First four. Clear distinction.
I'm going to throw something at Jordan here on the other side of the break here. You're watching the Brad Sess Match Show on Sports 360 AZ. Devin Henry and Jordan Hamm. Welcome back into the Brad Sess Match Show here on Sports360AZ.com. Devin Henry and Jordan Hamm with a hostile takeover here on this Wednesday, first day of spring. And, of course, we got to talk about tonight, 6:10 p.m. Arizona time. Arizona State men's basketball taking on St. John's in the first 4 game to try to, when you call it a play-in, in AIA, when you think of the play-in, that doesn't count towards the actual state tournament. But this random
they're a part of the
3
field.
Games. That, so, I mean, it's 64 teams plus 6, so there's 70 teams in March Madness. But here's,
68. It's a field of 68.
Is it 68?
Yeah, it's a field of 68.
Because it's 2-4. But isn't there... 1, 2, I get thrown off
counting on air.
Yeah, it doesn't work for me. I don't know because there was 2 play-in games yesterday,
right?
And then there are 2 play-in games today.
Yeah, so you add an additional 4 to the field of 64,
but that's 8 teams,
right? But that's not that 11 spot is there anyway. So for ASU and St. John's, there would be a team there anyway, so you're adding, rather than adding 2,
okay,
you're adding 1.
Okay, so I see
1.
Your point there. But here's what gets me.
Math on
so
air.
So you put in, and this is what I converse with people about. Maybe this is why people don't like to talk to me. I see this 11 game, ASU versus St. John's for the 11th spot. Shouldn't the loser be the 12th seed then? Like, that's what throws me off. That's what just throws me for a loop.
I don't think so, because it's based on, obviously, the 216s usually are the smaller schools, yes, that would, you know, be there anyway. But basically, it's two, for the 11s, it's
the
two,
larger schools. It's,
yeah, two comparable at-larges that are in there at the 11. Look, I get what you're saying. I'm fine with it. I'm fine with expanding to 68, adding, you know, a little bit to the, you know, a little bit more competition to it. It's not, it's, I'm not going to die on a hill for it, but, you know, I think it adds a bit of intrigue almost, you know, just adding a little extra difficulty to those two teams, and seeing a team, obviously seen it firsthand the past 2 years with ASU, has added some certain, I've had paid much closer attention to those games than maybe what I would have done before.
No, it's just weird. Like, I understand why it's there. I completely understand why it's there. And with the 16 spots, it's almost kind of like in our high school athletics in the AIA, it's like you're fighting for the final spots in the tournament. But like the 11, it every year it gets me, because I'm like, okay, it's like the final of the bigger schools. And I'm like, so then why was 11 picked?
I think because
there's like 20 spots under it still.
Right. But I think it's more, again, going to, when you look at a conference championship from a very small conference, even if they potentially run the table, they're more than likely not going to be above a 12 seed anyway.
Yeah.
So I think that's why they slate in nicely for like a 6-11 matchup for these bigger, like we said, Power 5 at-larges that come into these first four games. That I think that's why they're kind of seated where they're seated.
See, and it's just weird to me, because then you bring up the argument, well, then why don't you just drop one of the 16-team schools and drop a 15 into that six, I don't know. It throws me off.
You're really going down this rabbit. You're thinking a lot about,
like, maybe it's because ASU has been in it the last 2 years, so I look at that and I go, math, 11, then there's four 11s, then there's five more spots, five times, and I'm like, no, it's just weird to me. But then that also brings up the conversation.
He's like John Nash, like writing on the windows of
the entire wall.
Or Jim Carrey, like number
been.
23, yeah.
No, but then that brings up the conversation about taking away automatic bids in conference tournaments, which I don't like that idea at all, because I love the idea of Loyola Chicago last year. I can't say that word now for some reason. But when they went in as an 11 seed, here we go again. But anyway, like, they shouldn't have theoretically even been in the tournament. Boom, they're a Final Four team.
Right.
Because I think you take away the Cinderella, the ability for excitement and surprise in the tournament.
Right.
Where instead of having, you know, maybe Murray State upsets Marquette, instead of having them, Xavier or whoever is a Power 5 school.
Yeah.
It's just, that's what NCAA is, and I don't like the argument at all.
Well, and I think, you know, when you look at college football, like, the difference between the top 20 schools in college football versus the top, you know, or let's say, you know, 55 to 70, that's a huge difference.
Not to mention they cut in half with FBS, FCS. Anyway,
right,
already.
Yeah. But when you look at basketball, it's one, smaller rosters. Mm-hmm. So you have a guy like on Murray State, Ja Morant, like, he can take over a game all of a sudden.
He's going to be a top 5 pick, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that adds the element of being able to, with football, it's really hard. It's pretty upset proof.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part, once you get to, you know, top 10, really anybody can beat anybody. But when you have this many teams in one collection, the top 15 teams are going to make it wherever. But with college basketball, you know, just, again, it's madness. So that's why the weird things can happen. The, you know, double digit seeds can make a run. You know, it could conceivably be no number one seeds make the Final Four. You know, it's not a guarantee. So I'm in agreement with you. I think that the conference champions should be in there. And then you fight it out among the at-larges. But that gives a good mix. And then a lot of times, too, it's two teams that are pretty unfamiliar with each other. So it's just more kind of straight up, not, all right, Oregon, Washington, again, they know these two teams know each other really well. let's go head-to-head. It's, you know, the Virginia Tech St. Louis. Like,
yeah.
What did they know about each other going into this game, but, you know, before Selection Sunday?
Nevada, Florida.
Yeah. And then as you, you know, continue to get through it, it's you have 2 days to prepare for this team that you probably had, you know, very little knowledge of moving up.
Absolutely. And then through all this, let's go back and let's look back at the playing game. I will shut up. I guarantee. The first four game, the play-in game, the 11 game, I don't know, I'll throw out a bunch of different names for it. I'll figure it out. ASU St. John's. When you look at the Pac-12 tournament, when Remy Martin was on, he was on. He was lights out. That Oregon game, it goes into overtime. I mean, in the fourth quarter, there were spots where you see Remy Martin get confused. There were spots where he takes it by himself. He crosses over to the left side of the floor. He floats away, and it's like, well, of course it's going to go in.
Right.
But then you look at overtime and just everything.
That injury changed everything. And obviously that's been the biggest storyline going into this. You know, on Monday I talked to Kyle Dodd about this, of if Remy can't go or if Remy's very limited, is it Lou Dort? Is it, and he brought up Zylan Cheatham. You have the luxury of having a big guy that can play the one. Like, how many teams can say that? And also a guy that is a very accomplished rebounder and can, you know, muddy it up in the paint if he needs to. You know, last year I think they had a couple of big guys that could have taken it up the paint, but they were so small that it was just kind of run and gun. So that versatility is huge for them. But Remy Martin, he's been the guy that's has kind of developed into the they need a bucket, they need a big play. It's gonna go through Remy, whether it's an assist, whether it's a big defensive stop, whether it's a basket. He's been the guy. So if you have him limited, that is a huge you know, knock to ASU, especially against the St. John's team, who's a little bit smaller, likes to run a bit more. I'm sure they're going to try to, you know, tire him out, or maybe not conditioning wise, but, you know, really kind of test that injury and make him work throughout it. And then it's got to be a guy like Rob Edwards. Will he be able to step up? That Utah game from a couple weeks ago, the 28 points on a tough place to play in Utah. They got that win. He's been a different player since then. So I think defensively he's been very good, but he needs to come out shooting because, as Kyle said, it's when he's off, it's very evident, and you know, the team really struggles to have that shooter because it's so weird from last year where they could just all five guys on the team could shoot, you know, with the exception of Romello White. But this team, they don't quite have as much outside shooting, but Edwards has kind of developed into that go-to guy for them. Lou Dort will shoot it a lot. You know, the effectiveness will be, you know, up for debate. But Rob Edwards is the guy, I think, that, you know, if they need a big outside basket, he could be that guy, especially if Remy Martin is out.
Dort shooting about 40% from the field, which, I mean, it sounds weird, but it's, I mean, that's pretty typical.
And he's most effective when he's built like a college football safety, so when he can navigate in the paint and kind of, you know, beat up the defense a little bit, that's when he's at his best. You know, I think it's kind of a disservice if he's posting up on the outside and shooting some threes. The ASU offense is at its best when Lou Dort is driving in, they're collapsing, and then he can get it out to the Remy Martins, to the Rob Edwards, you know, make a nice pass to Zylan Cheatham. You know, and I think another key is going to be Kamani Lawrence. He's been a guy that's kind of developed into a role player. I thought he may be a starting five guy that would play a ton of minutes and be a big-time contributor. He's been certainly effective when he's been out on the floor, but they're going to need a big game from him as well.
ASU versus St. John's, you look back to last year's 11 game, ASU, Syracuse, both teams beat a number one seed this year, but only one team is back playing for that 11th spot. Unfortunately, that one's ASU. Syracuse is in at an 8. We have to wait and see if ASU is going to be in that final 64 teams to try to fight into 32, Sweet 16, whatever, so on and so forth. But the winner of this game will go on to play in the round of 64 against Buffalo, the Arizona killer from last year. If they win that game, most likely they're going to see Texas Tech in the round of 32. Then there's the possibility of playing a Nevada, a Florida, a Michigan, or whatever, mm-hmm. if you get all the way up to the Sweet 16. Mm-hmm. And this is a team who we've seen the last 2 years. They can beat anyone on any given day,
yeah.
but they can lose to anyone on any given day, too, which is just the weirdest part for me, especially watching the Syracuse game last year, because it felt like they're in it, but watching this team all year long, I know that they might not actually be in it at all.
Yeah, and it's been an up-and-down year, I think, for the entire conference. Up-and-down year for ASU, obviously. You look at the highs, the win against Kansas, the win at home against Washington, the Utah win on the road, and then you look at the lows, the loss to Princeton at home, the loss to Washington State at home.
Some of those coming after direct huge wins,
too. Yeah, yeah. But I think that this is probably the most talented team that we've seen in Tempe for a very, very long time. So it's going to be interesting. Again, if they get past this first four game, the storylines will be flying of Bobby Hurley against his old school, yeah. against Buffalo, kind of where he made his mark as a college coach. So fun starts tonight. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, no kidding. Absolutely. And then, of course, a team that beats Kansas, even though they're the 4 seed, they were the number 1 seed. They were in Tempe, and they took down Kansas. That's still a big deal, I think. But the most important part of this season, before we go away and we check out the 5-star sit-down, your bracket. You got to have a good bracket. Now, I get yelled at every now and again because people are like, you need one bracket. You do one bracket.
Oh, like, you're one of those guys?
I'm not. I have, like, 7. And here's why. Because I have
stick by
like
your
my
word,
regular
man.
Bracket. Are you ready for this? My bracket
no, I'm
that
not.
I make sure that I put in every single year is my logo bracket.
Okay.
Purely going off of other teams' logos.
I had my dog choose my bracket. So
I know. If you go and you look at Sports360AZ's Instagram page.
If you have like an hour and a half to kill, I didn't think it was going to take that long, but it took a long time. That's the first time I live streamed it and it was like, wow. Okay. But yeah, come on. Just do one bracket.
No.
Keep it simple.
I get a few because I'm like, I want my real bracket. I want the ones that I actually want to happen. Like, I know it's not going to happen, but this would be really cool. I guess I only did 4 this year. Then I got a logo bracket. Then
only
I have a
4.
Then I have a BPI bracket because I want to see if I just didn't. Because you spend like an hour on these brackets sometimes. So I just go, here's a one button click. Am I going to actually beat this or not? Did all that time that I spent making a bracket actually matter? The answer is usually no.
No, it didn't.
So that's why I have all those brackets. Like a real one, an imaginary one, a logo one, and then I just spent a couple hours doing this. Did it actually matter bracket? So I have
productive
fun with
use
it.
Of time.
I think so.
Almost as productive as using a full minute to add up how many teams are in the bracket.
It's productive because then I got my show sheet done. You see right there, it's a bunch of blue lines for today. Boom. Haas will take over the Brass Test Match Show. Devin Henry, Jordan Hamm. Someone's going to be back on Wednesday. I don't know. We never know. We just fly by the seat of our pants here, and it's a good time. We make it work. We have a good time. Jordan walked in like 15 minutes before the show, and I was like, hey, do you want to do the show today? He's like, yeah.
Sure.
Here we are now. But now coming up next, because we got to do it, the 5-star sit-down coming on up. We're going to go over some of the big visits, some of the unofficial visits that we kind of missed out on being gone the past couple of weeks. And now we're going to catch everyone back up to what's going on in Arizona high school football recruiting. We'll also talk to Gilbert quarterback Will Plummer. And also we're going to talk to Chris Cartman, publisher on SunDevilSource.com. All that coming on up, but that's going to do it for now for the Brad Test Match Show on Sports360AZ.com. Be sure to stick around, though, plenty more coming up here on Sports360AZ.com.